Hey there, Freaky Fam, and welcome to another episode of Mads, Monsters, and Maniacs. I'm your host, Mads. Life has been almost perfectly peachy for me. Other than the fact that I was sick last week and thought I was on my deathbed, so that's been fun. It honestly wasn't that bad. I just had mucus that I felt was coming out of absolutely every crevice of my body. That's disgusting, and I don't mean it literally. It was just all around a gross experience. But thankfully, I had recorded before I got sick, so you guys didn't have to listen to my nasty ass voice that I was experiencing. And now that it is finally time to record for this week, I sound a million times better and I can actually hold a conversation without getting thrown into a coughing fit. I'm not going to lie to you. I don't want to get into politics or anything of the sort. It's all around incredibly tragic for women or anyone who has a uterus. I'm not happy with the decision to overturn Roe versus Wade, and I firmly believe that it is just going to get worse from here. Overall, I'm just incredibly dumbfounded, and I want to say that I am shocked, but unfortunately, with all of the decisions that have been made over the last several years, I'm not shocked whatsoever by this. But I do believe that we have to keep talking about it, acknowledging it, standing together in order to get where we need to be. Everyone should have the right to bodily autonomy. And if you disagree with that, then don't listen to this podcast anymore because it is not for you. It's exactly the same thing whenever people flipped out saying my body, my choice when it came to wearing a mask or receiving a vaccine. Abortion is healthcare. And that is all I will say about it this week. But be prepared for in the future because it will be a topic that we will discuss. So for this week's episode, we have another cliffhanger. It's another very strange case, and this one does end with murder, and it is still currently unsolved. So we will be discussing the mysterious murder of Blair Adams. So on July 11th, 1996, the partially nude body from the waist down of a man was found at a construction site in a parking lot in Knoxville, Tennessee, off Interstate 40. Beside the body was about $4,000 worth of cash in American, Canadian, and German currencies. There was also a fanny pack with platinum, gold bars, and coins, and jewelry inside. His wallet was also found at the scene, so he was identified as 31-year-old Blair Adams from Surrey, British Columbia. Although his death was mysterious, friends, family, and co-workers explained his behavior before the murder was even more bizarre. So there isn't much out there about Blair's childhood, unfortunately. We know that he was born Robert Dennis Blair Adams on December 28, 1964. He worked as a construction foreman in his hometown of Surrey. His family, friends, and coworkers described him as cheerful, friendly, and incredibly optimistic. Already sounds like a top-tier man. I truly feel with every year I age, I get more and more pessimistic of the world. But at some point, that kind of changed because Blair started just being incredibly stressed out and just filled with paranoia. He experienced frequent mood swings and constantly dealt with sleep deprivation, which, as we know, sleep deprivation really plays into a lot of paranoia and makes you think that you see things that aren't there, You just become very delirious. I mean, you can die from sleep deprivation. It's really a crazy thing. I know that there was it's a creepypasta story, so it's not real, but it had to do with like sleep deprivation. That one was kind of spooky. But I know that there was another like sleep experiment done within psychology. I just can't remember which one, but maybe that would be I don't know if you guys would be into it, but if you want me to talk about some of the unethical psychology experiments that were done like a long ass time ago, let me know, because that would be a very interesting topic to discuss. So nobody really understood what was happening with Blair, because this was nothing like the Blair that they knew. And his mother started to grow very worried for his well-being, and she was also just genuinely concerned for his personal welfare. But every time she would ask him what was wrong or what was going on, he would be very vague and would tell her that he couldn't tell her about it. So he also wasn't receiving any treatment or therapy at the time, so he wasn't ever formally diagnosed with anything. Also, none of my research, though, turned up saying that, like, he wasn't mentally ill. So, unfortunately, we don't know either way, or if this paranoia really was something, or if he was just experiencing some sort of mental illness. He had previously had issues with abusing alcohol, but by all accounts, he seemed to be doing so much better. He was regularly attending AA meetings and had been sober for 2 years. Everything in his life seemed to be going well for him until the summer of 1996, when things really seemed to start to crumble. He started becoming careless at work, which, I mean, as we said, he works in construction. That is one of those jobs that you cannot be careless at. And he eventually ended up leaving that job and never even collected his last paycheck. He didn't really even have a reason as to why he left, but he was convinced that people were spreading rumors about him and even believed that somebody wanted him dead. On July 5th, 1996, Blair went to his bank in Canada and withdrew all of his money from the account. I don't know if banks ever find that to be a red flag. I feel like it would be. Because I feel like if you made the excuse saying you were going to like switch banks or something, like they could just do like a money transfer or like a wire. Blair then had a safety deposit box, which he took everything out of and stored in that fanny pack. 2 days later, on July 7th, he made his first attempt to enter the United States, but failed. He tried to board a ferry in Victoria to Seattle, but was denied when border control officials became suspicious that he was involved with drugs since he was carrying so much cash with him. Blair also lied to authorities, telling them that he had no prior criminal convictions, but he did in fact have a criminal record for drugs and assault. When he was told he couldn't cross the border, he went to visit friends and then his mother, Sandra Edwards. On July 8th, 1996, Blair left his mother's house for the last time. Once he left her home, he went to purchase a plane ticket to Germany, supposedly to visit an ex-girlfriend of his that he met during his time working in Germany. He used cash to purchase a round-trip flight to Frankfurt, but he had the ticket refunded later that same day. I also find it interesting that he was able to purchase a ticket to leave the country, but also like failed to get into another country. I don't know. I think it's weird. I've never left the country, so I don't know the whole protocol other than you need a passport. The next day, on July 9th, he once again tried to cross the border and failed. It was during the early hours of the morning, dawn, if you will, so it was still pretty dark outside. Blair was traveling on foot and authorities stopped him when they thought that he was a suspect that had stolen a car earlier that night. Police obviously didn't have any sort of evidence to keep him or that he was even the correct suspect, so they ended up releasing him. They did note that Blair had scratches on his legs and hands during this encounter, but it was never uncovered on how he received these scratches. It does make me wonder, though, if these scratches were self-inflicted since he was dealing with paranoia. But then Blair got lucky because on his third try to enter the United States, he was successful. I guess the saying, third time's the charm, really is true. I feel like I need to look up where that originates. I have a lot of questions for that. So now that Blair has successfully entered the United States, he did this because he left his car at the airport in Vancouver and rented a Nissan Altima, which allowed him to cross the border into Seattle. Once he was in Seattle, he purchased a plane ticket to Washington, D.C. I did read in the Wikipedia source that this is where he first tried to make the purchase for the Germany ticket. And his ex-girlfriend also did make a statement later saying that he had never contacted her for this apparent trip. So I did want to mention that as well. So Blair arrived in Washington, D.C. on July 10th, and once he arrived, he rented another car, this time being a Toyota Camry, and began driving to Knoxville at 6:45 a.m. Why he didn't fly to Tennessee, we don't know. I'm assuming it had to do with the paranoia as well. And I mean, he's paying everything in cash, so clearly he does not want to be tracked. Early that same morning in Troy, Virginia, Blair got into a little accident where he backed his car into another car, causing minor damage. The driver of the car told detectives that Blair seemed nice, but like he was in a hurry. Overall, the drive was about 7 hours, and when Blair got into Knoxville, he had a really bizarre interaction at the gas station. So he got to the station at about 5:30 in the afternoon and claimed that the keys to the rental car were no longer working. Which is strange since he literally just drove 7 hours and had not experienced this issue before. But the reason he was having issues with the key was because he was trying to use the key to the Nissan that he left in Seattle before he hopped on a plane to Washington, D.C. An interstate repair service driver named Gerald Sapp swooped in to save the day and help Blair. I'm sure he thought that this was going to be an easy fix for him, but it was not, because when he obviously realized that he was just using the wrong car key, he asked Blair to just check his pockets. Like, obviously he drove it up there, so he's like, dude, check your pockets. It's probably in there. Like, how else would you have gotten here? But Blair refused. He was like, no, they're not in my pockets. It's not there. And he would not check in front of this man. So the Camry ended up being towed to an auto shop, and Gerald gave Blair a ride to a nearby Fairfield Inn. Which, good for Gerald. It's too strange for my taste. If someone just refused to check their pockets for a car key, I'd be like, this is weird. This is very strange. But later when questioned, Gerald noted how strange Blair had been acting and thought something weird was going on with him. But I mean, he's just trying to do his job, you know? Around 7 p.m., Blair rented a room for one night at the Fairfield Inn. But later in the investigation, authorities don't believe that Blair ever even entered his room. Surveillance cameras of the hotel show Blair entering the hotel lobby, him at the front desk, and then leaving around 5 times in about a 40-minute time frame. Like, he was just kind of pacing around in the lobby, going back and forth. So he purchased the room and paid $100, and when the hotel clerk went to give him his change, he exited the lobby and walked outside. Hotel staff also recalled that Blair seemed agitated and paranoid. They also described him as acting as if someone was after him, and clearly someone was. On July 11th, 1996, construction workers discovered Blair on the construction site around 7 a.m. At first, they thought he was a sleeping squatter, but when they had approached him, they realized he was dead. He was half naked from the waist down and his shirt was open. His pants and socks were found next to his body. They also noticed all of the cash and valuables, so they knew he couldn't have been homeless. I mean, remember, he had gold bars too. Along with the money and other valuables next to the body, there was also the key to the Camry. Yeah, the very one that he refused to check his pockets for. There was also a duffel bag near the body with travel maps and receipts in it. Authorities also noted that there were several cuts and scratches on his body. One was on his forehead, and that was determined to be from either a club or a crowbar. It did appear that he had defensive wounds, so he did try to fight off his attacker. The medical examiner on the case determined that Blair's cause of death was due to a severe blow to his stomach, causing his abdomen to rupture and cause septic shock. I did try to look up about how much force it would take to hit someone in the stomach and rupture their abdomen, and I could not find an exact number. Everything was pretty much like talking about how much force it would take to rupture like a spleen or anything like that, but I couldn't find anything specifically for abdomen. If anyone happens to know, I would love to know the answer to that, but we'll circle back to that. Blair is also believed to have been sexually assaulted, but no DNA evidence was discovered at the crime scene that allowed police to determine the manner of the assault. Blair did also have food remnants in his stomach, and there were sightings of Blair talking to other men, one at a truck stop and another at a nearby Cracker Barrel. But sadly, these leads did not help police get any further in this investigation. And unfortunately, like, that's literally it. Police had no evidence, no murder weapon was ever found, and there were no drugs or alcohol in Blair's system. The only DNA evidence that was found at the scene was a long strand of hair found in Blair's hand, but when it was taken in for testing, nothing ever seemed to bring them closer to finding the killer. Nobody knows what happened to Blair between the last time he was seen at the hotel and how he ended up in the parking lot of the construction site. There aren't a lot of theories in this case, but one of the most popular one was a sex act gone wrong. It basically theorizes that Blair hired a sex worker who was accompanied by a pimp. I also am not sure if pimp is no longer the correct word for that. I apologize in advance. I will continue using that term, but if there is a better one for it, please let me know. I would like to be proactive with that. So the theory goes on to say that they planned to rob him, but when things didn't go according to plan, they got scared and killed him. A woman's scream was reported around 3:30 a.m. and was heard coming from the direction of that parking lot. So it was believed that this was the sex worker's scream when the pimp hit Blair. The theory goes on to say that things started up in the car, but then Blair resisted from being robbed. He was then hit in the head and pushed from the car. And then while trying to get out of there, the car then hit Blair in the stomach, causing the blow to his abdomen. They then drive away, leaving Blair to die. And although this is the most popular theory, I don't buy it. There's too many things, and don't you worry, I have a list. One. Since when do sex workers provide their own cars? Never. Two, if we believe this theory, why not make off with the money? In any sense, if someone was being robbed and the murder was an accident, why would they still abandon the money? They wouldn't. Three, it was not proven if he had been sexually assaulted, and that can be a broad term. So if he had hired a sex worker and say it was oral, there would be DNA of their saliva. Or if it was sex, wouldn't they find a condom, latex remnants, or if they didn't use a condom, there would once again be DNA. I think they're not confirming or denying a sexual assault because he was pantsless, which is also why I kind of think that this theory is out there. But I mean, even if they didn't get down to do anything because he was being robbed, like, why was he pantsless? And number four, if Blair was truly as paranoid as everyone claimed he was, then why on earth would he drop his guard and randomly hire a sex worker? I mean, he's paying cash for all of these trips. He worked so hard trying to get into the U.S., drove across the country, and he's just like, you know what? I'm lonely for the night. He didn't even check into his hotel room. You know, that's another thing. Number five, if he was to hire a sex worker, why would you do it in a car? He had a hotel room already. So why wouldn't he take them back to his hotel? Another theory that I did come across, it's pretty brief. Blair was so paranoid that maybe he got into a fight with someone that really didn't mean Blair any harm, but, you know, Blair was paranoid and paranoia really gets to you. So something happens, they get into an altercation, this other man punches Blair in the stomach and takes off. But this theory doesn't really pan out to me because how did his money get everywhere and why was he pantsless and why was he sockless, you know? So that one doesn't make sense to me. The only other lead that came out of the investigation was in 2010 in an interview with local law enforcement. It was revealed that the Knoxville Police Department had never received a credible tip during Blair's death. Although there was a composite sketch of a man that was released in the case. Two women witnessed the man speaking to Blair outside of the Cracker Barrel in Knoxville, which that was one of the tips that they did receive, but unfortunately, nothing ever came of the tip. To this day, we don't know who murdered Blair. It's still unsolved and considered a cold case. If you guys have any theories for this case, I would love to hear them. You can follow along online on Instagram. You can follow along online. The Instagram page is at Mads Monsters Maniacs. I post photos of all of the cases we talk about. If you want to leave a comment on there or even just DM me, that's totally fine. I would love to chat about this case. Or if you want to email me your theories about it, the email is madsmonstersmaniacs@gmail.com. That is what I have for you guys this week. I know it's a shorter episode. I'm so sorry. I do have some other things in the work. And like I said, if you would like me to talk about some unethical psychology experiments, please let me know. I think that that would be so much fun to talk about. I still have so much psychology stuff from when I went to college. So it would be really awesome to chat about that stuff again. So if you guys are into it, please, please, please let me know. If you don't let me know, I'm more than likely still going to do it. So thank you guys so much for listening. And we'll chat again next week. Thanks.